Welcome for Computer Graphics. So in this week, we will speak about rasterization. So I introduced last week, I think the major questions that we will look into. In particular, we started with 2D graphics. And in fact, also today, we will look at 2D lines. But yeah, as you might imagine, if you take a 3D line and you map it to a 2D image, it still is a line, yeah? So rasterization in 2D and 3D will be rather similar. And so we will look into rasterization. Today we will see how we can rasterize lines. And on Thursday, then we will see how to also fill objects. And in particular, we will decompose everything into triangles and then rasterize these, or arbitrary polygons. This is what we will look into tomorrow, on Thursday, and today we look at lines. So, these are the two main problems, I would say, in rasterization. Of course, there you can also define other ones, but these are probably the most basic ones. Later on, we will mainly look into triangles. Yeah, so if we render filled objects, we decompose them into triangles, and then we have the challenge to rasterize such a triangle. And rasterization in that sense now means, given a triangle with three vertices, how can we enumerate all the pixels that are within that triangle? Yeah, because if we want to rasterize it, we have to find all these pixels in here, and we somehow have to enumerate them. And of course, that needs to be very fast. Efficiency is always the major problem with these rasterization things, because you need to imagine for a computer game, for instance, where you want to have 60 new images per second. Every image consists of 2 million pixels, for instance, and you want to render a scene that contains 10 million triangles. It's a very, very, very large number of pixels that you need to enumerate, and you need the most efficient algorithm possible to do that, so that you can achieve real-time rendering. And ideally, the algorithm should be so simple that it can also be well implemented in hardware. In fact, this is also the case. Normally, if you do graphics, you always have a little special processor in your computer, even on mobile phones. These are available today, or standard today. So it's special processors that mainly do graphics, and they all contain these algorithms inside, so that they do that very efficiently in hardware. Okay, and this is for triangle, and today we will look at the maybe more simpler case, how to rasterize a line. Even though these algorithms, as I said, are usually implemented in hardware or already by some library, it definitely makes sense to know how they work, because there are always problems that are very similar. And it's always good to understand what happens under the engine so that we can control that better. We will come back to that later when we learn how to program OpenGL. Then we will see that it's important to understand how at least the idea of these algorithms is, so that we can also apply OpenGL. So lines are very widely used to display CAD models. So if you're generating plans or things like that, construction drawings, then usually this happens using lines. So here we can see an example of, I think it's an engine. This is a complex 3D model. And in that case, to also see details from the inside, so that nothing is hidden. This is rendered using lines, and all the objects are rendered by their outline. So this would be an example where we need to render lines or to rasterize lines. We've also seen examples last week when I've shown you this path primitive, for instance, and I also told you that even if these paths can contain curves, or what we think is curves, in fact, these curves are usually approximated by short line segments, and then in the end, finally rasterized as line segments. Yeah, so that would be another example. And also here, the outlines here, of course, they are modeled also using curves, for instance, or arcs or something like that. And to display them, then they are finally subdivided to short line segments, which are then rasterized. Yeah, so just to render that model again, that's many thousands or hundred thousands of little lines. Yeah, so again, very, very important to do that efficiently. Yeah, unless if you have to wait 30 seconds for a new drawing, yeah, that's not helpful. You want to interact with that, you want to rotate the model and so forth. Okay, so this is today. Next week, we will look into how we can also fill polygons. Yeah, not only draw the outline, but also fill arbitrary objects or polygons. So one effect could be that we get proper occlusion. So in that case now, all the filled objects or the surface objects are filled with white ink, yeah, so that they are non-transparent. And by that, of course, now you cannot see detail from the inside, but it looks more realistic, yeah, and maybe not as confusing as this one. But the normal application is that typically, yeah, we want to render objects with filled polygons and not just an illustration or a drawing, but something that hopefully looks more realistic. And to that end, we need to also fill these. And to fill objects, we approximate shapes by arbitrary polygons. And the most simple polygon is a triangle. And every polygon can be split into single triangles, and that's what we call triangulation. And so all surfaces usually we describe as a set of triangles, as a triangle mesh. We will also come back to this. And then we need an algorithm to fill such triangles, and this is what comes then next week. Yeah, how can we also fill these objects? But today we want to look into rasterization of lines, and in fact, of course, the boundary of a triangle are also lines. So many of the ideas we see today, we will come back also for rasterizing the triangles. So the problem statement is very simple. Given is a line segment or a segment with two endpoints, a starting point and an endpoint, x0, y0, x1, y1. And now we somehow want to find pixels along this line. So if we set these pixels, we see a line. And maybe you already here realize that this problem is a little bit ill-posed, yeah, because a line is infinitely thin. Yeah. So yeah, which are the pixels that we really want to set? I mean, rasterizing a line, yeah, it has zero area. Yeah, so we cannot really well rasterize it. And so we will have to think about rasterization rules, and I will come back to that in a minute. Let's first look at different ideas how we could do that, but always keep in mind, yeah, to think about what really is a line. Yeah, how can we rasterize such a line, in fact. Okay, so yeah, here we already have the first idea how we can rasterize a line, and in fact I would again try and implement that with you. Or oh, that didn't work. Here it is. Okay, yeah, so here in the upper left now we already see a first version of a program that rasterizes such a line, and here the okay. I hope that doesn't happen too often now. Okay, let's see. So first of all, of course, we need, again, a mathematical description. Yeah, how can we describe a line between two points? So let's say our starting point is x0, y0, and we have x1, y1. Yeah, and now we want to find pixel positions along this line here. And the normal way would be that we probably enumerate points along this line. And for each of these points, yeah, we compute its coordinates, x, y. Probably we simply find the pixel that contains this point. Yeah, of course, this point will never or almost never be just in the center, so we will have rounding operations on x and y and set the corresponding pixel. Yeah, so set pixel round x, round y, for instance. Okay, so how can we enumerate points along a line? I mean, I hope it's something that you can do immediately. So there are different options to describe such a line mathematically. One possibility would be that we say, okay, we have our starting point and our end point, and we make an arbitrary affine interpolation between the two. So alpha now is a parameter between 0 and 1. And for alpha equals 0, we get the starting point. For 1, we get the end point. And for values between 0 and 1, we get points in between. Yeah? So we can also write that like this. Yeah, so it's quite simple. Yeah, for an arbitrary alpha, we get now points here along this line. And now we take a certain number of points. Yeah, we let alpha run from zero to one. Yeah, and now we have the problem. Yeah, what is our increment? Yeah, how many steps do we do along the line? Now, it's not so simple. If we have a very short line, yeah, then we need only few steps. But if the line goes over the entire screen, we need many steps. Yeah? So we might think about how long is that line, or we just take a simple upper bound. Yeah, that's also an option. So let's say we take 1/1000. Yeah, so that should always be enough. Yeah. But, of course, that's very wasteful. If we now rasterize a line that is 3 pixels wide, yeah, we set one pixel 300 times, then the next pixel 300 times, then the other pixel more than 300 times. So we could think about a line length, yeah, and determine the line length and then step in 1 pixel steps along this line. Yeah, that would work, definitely. Yeah, but what will also happen is that from time to time we set a pixel twice, yeah, because the first position is here, the next one is here, for instance. Yeah, they have a distance of 1, but they are both within a pixel. And that means at some other places we might also get gaps. Yeah, so we have holes in our line. So that's tricky. A probably better option is to say the following. If we have that line segment here, what we do is that along x, yeah, we always take 1 pixel steps. Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We always go 1 pixel in x direction. Yeah, and then we determine the corresponding point in y direction and rasterize this one. Yeah, and so for every point along x, we have 1 point along y. And if the slope of the line, yeah, is not too steep, I'm really sorry for that. Okay, this was just the screensaver. Okay, so we go single or steps with 1 pixel width, and then we compute the corresponding y value and set that one. And if the line is not too steep, yeah, then we will get a closed line, yeah, because for every x we have exactly one y. Yeah, and yeah, now we need a way to, for every x, to compute the corresponding y value. And of course we can do that. We know how to describe such a line. So the typical way is to say y equals mx plus t. So m is the slope of the line. And t, yeah, tells us where the line intersects the y-axis. Yeah, it's sort of the offset. And now we only know that our line goes through x0, y0, and x1, y1, so we somehow have to convert it to the parameters m and t, and that's rather simple. M is tells us how far for a certain delta x, how far does it go upwards? Yeah, so we can simply take the entire line, then on the distance delta x, which is x1 minus x0, it goes up y1 minus y0. And because we know that, for instance, for the starting point, y0 should be m times x plus t, we can directly solve for t. T equals y0 minus mx. Yeah? So by computing this m and this t, we know the equation here. And now we can iterate over all possible x pixel positions, yeah, from x0 to x1, and compute the corresponding y, which will not be an integer. X will be an integer. Yeah, because our starting and end point for now are integer positions. And so we need to round and then set the corresponding pixel. Yeah? Just iterating from left to right. And in fact, that's the code that we see here. Yeah? I hope you can read it, and it's big enough. So first of all, we compute m, the slope of our line. Then we compute t. That's this formula here, yeah? Then we compute t, and then we go for x from x0 to x1, steps by one, and set the corresponding pixel x, mx plus t. Yeah? Yeah?
X is always integer, right? Then why were you using set pixel round x, round y?
Here? No. Okay, if we take that formula here, yeah? Alpha is not an integer. Alpha is a value between 0 and 1. It's a fraction, yeah? And then here, these will be float values, the corresponding. Here in the code, by the way, x will be an integer, and y here, this is a float, but as you probably already realized in JavaScript, JavaScript doesn't make an integer a difference between integers and floats. Yeah, so we don't have to care about that. If you use C++, you need to be aware that x is an integer and m in this example is a float value. Yeah, because you don't hit the pixels at the center position. You hit the pixels somewhere in between, and then you have to round to find the right pixel position. Okay, so that's simple. Yeah, but it's definitely not the best algorithm yet, but it's simple to program. Here we can see a simple example. That's a simple line that is rendered correctly. Here we can switch, for instance, here now we see a fan. Yeah, and you see all these lines, yeah, are rasterized correctly, but probably you also realize that this line here is the last one that won't have problems. Because if we now take a steep line like this one, yeah, now, surprisingly, here on the screen, it looks good. But in fact, I have a picture in a minute on the slides. You will see that the pixels are set like this. Yeah, because for every x, we only have one y value. Yeah? And if this is the pixel grid, like this, yeah, we have gaps here in between. So, yeah, in that case, we have to do something different. In fact, we will see that we can just switch x and y, sort of, yeah, and enumerate along y and compute the corresponding x so that we get something that also fills these holes. Okay, so that's very simple. But in fact, we can make that code even more simple. Because let's look at the loop in here. You see that to compute y, we have to do one multiplication and one addition. Yeah? And we can also do that incremental. And here we make the following observation. If we go to the right by one, yeah. If we go to the right by one, then in y direction, we will always go up by m, the slope. Yeah, m in our case here is a value between 0 and 1. So yeah, either we stay within the same pixel or we get up 1 pixel. But in floating point, yeah, whenever we get 1 to the right, we can compute the new y by adding m. So we have an incremental solution that we see here. Yeah, again, we compute m and y as before. We go from x0 to x1 with x. But now we have a variable y that starts at y0. And so we set the first pixel, which is then at x0, y0, and then we increment y by m. Yeah, so y is the current y position. It starts at y0, and in every step we go up by m. Yeah, and whenever we reach a new pixel, yeah, then a new pixel is set, and then we stay in that row, and then we go up again. And of course now, yeah, we have no multiplications anymore in the loop, but just simple additions. Okay, so that's already a very efficient way, but we'll see how we can do it even better. But before, I would also like to show you another variant. Yeah, for those of you who love recursion, of course, yeah, that's maybe more an academic example, but of course we could also think about a recursive version. What we could also do is that we say, okay, rasterizing a line from here to here, we can subdivide into rasterizing or to find the midpoint, and then rasterizing this line and this line. Yeah, and for each of these, we do recursion. So we rasterize this half and this half and this one and this one, and we simply stop recursion if the start and the end point, for instance, are within the same pixel. Yeah, then we just set this particular pixel. That also works. You can look at this here. You see the lines become thicker, maybe. So look again, now they become thinner. I hope you can see it on the screen. Recursive, like this, yeah, things become a little bit thicker, just because now with this variant, we are not guaranteed that for every x, we only have one pixel set, yeah, but we can have multiple pixel set. And this brings us back to this rasterization rules, yeah? Is that maybe better than the other one? Yeah, we will see this. So. Okay. Oops. Okay, here we are, yeah? So that's the first variant again, with where we directly compute mx plus t. And there's already another thing that we can already observe here, which is interesting, or which we might consider. Of course, now, because for every pixel in x direction, yeah, we set 1 pixel in y direction. That means if we have a horizontal line like this here, this will get exactly as many pixel set as this line. Yeah, both have the same x0 and x1, so the number of pixel set for both is the same. But of course that line is longer. It's longer by a square root of 2. That means by something like 40%. Yeah? So it has the same number of pixels on a 40% longer line. And as a result, these lines appear a little bit thinner or lighter, which is also not really perfect. Yeah? So we will also see that maybe we can also solve for that. And we have another problem. Yeah, and this is, if the slope is larger than 1, we get these holes. And I've shown you, but on the screen, due to filtering and stuff like that that happens on the screen, this doesn't really become visible. But if we zoom in, yeah, we realize that there are less points or that there are gaps along the line. And this is exactly this effect here that I've shown you. And in the worst case, a vertical line, yeah, cannot be rendered at all. Because in that case, x0 and x1 are identical, so the loop doesn't even start. Or it only sets one single pixel. Yeah? So, okay. Then we have the incremental version I've just shown you. Yeah? Now the loop becomes much simpler. In the loop, we only add the slope. And yeah, so we have a rather fast version of our algorithm. Very simple and recursive. Yeah, I mean, it's more an academic example. It's slow, you need a stack for it, and so forth. It's definitely not the best solution. Okay, so, yeah, now that we had a little bit idea what's going on, we can think about, yeah, what's the right solution? And in fact, what we want to aim for now is this variant here. If we want to rasterize a line from here to here, we want to find an approximation, yeah, which is connected in the sense that two pixel always has a left and a right neighbor that are connected at least via a corner. And this is what we call the thinnest approximation of the line, and this is what we get with the algorithms you just saw, yeah? That for every x, we get one single y. We could also think about trying to set all pixels that are touched by the line. This gives a thicker approximation, yeah? And if that would also be possible, but in fact, yeah, that one delivers very thick lines, so in the end the result is that this is usually the rasterization rule for lines that is to be used. Yeah, and here you see the blue pixels are the difference between the two, and with our recursive variant we would get more this here. Yeah, probably some pixels are still missed, but we are more to this than to this. Okay. So, how can we solve that? I mean, I think I can rather quickly go over this because this is just what I've explained here. So let's say we have the problem, we want to rasterize a line from 0, 0 to 6, 6. That's very simple. Yeah, we go along x and or we always go one to the right and one upwards, yeah, to get a new pixel. Now, if we have a smaller slope, yeah, it's a little bit more complicated. Here we go to the right, then right up, right, right up, right, right up, right, right up. Yeah, and you see the ratio between going upwards or right up and only going right is exactly the slope. Here, if the slope is 4/8, that means in 50% of the cases we go upwards, and in the other 50 we only go to the right. Yeah. And if we have such a simple case of 50% or a slope of 1/2, that's simple. But if in the general case, yeah, we somehow have to think about how can we solve that. And yeah, this is where this mathematical description kicks in. We say, okay, M, or we describe our line using this simple formula here. Now this one is a little bit different. Here we have mx plus t, and now we have mx minus x0. Yeah, so this is a little bit closer to the original definition by using x0 and y0 as starting point, so we don't need to compute t, but directly take x0, and m is computed as I've described. It's here this ratio that is the slope of the line. So that's very simple. And by construction, now this algorithm always assumes that we have the following setup. Yeah, that we assume that our point is at the right of the starting point. Yeah, because our loop goes from x0 to x1, so we go to the right, and we assume that we have a slope smaller than 1. Yeah, to avoid that problem. So by the way, please excuse, so the coordinate system in these demos is in the upper left, the origin, yeah, and here the origin is in the lower left. Yeah, so from time to time you have to swap your notion of upwards and downwards, so to say. Yeah, so here the origin is here, yeah, and so we go into this direction. So essentially this algorithm here, as I described it, only works if the target point is here in this octant. Yeah. If it's more on the left, we will get gaps. If it's even more here on this side, it won't work at all because the line immediately, the loop immediately stops, and the same down here. So it only works in 1/8 of our screen, of 1/8 of all possible lines. Okay. This algorithm you know, and now this one here is really C and not JavaScript, so we also look into types. And here you can see now the slope is a float. For the x coordinates, we take integers. Yeah, and the y coordinate now is also a float. X and x0 are integers, and y0 is an integer, but m is a float. And so if we want to set the pixel, we need to round y. And x, we can take directly the pixel position. And these types now will become interesting, because what we realize at some, or okay, at least on older computers, an addition of integer values is much faster than with floating point values. Computing with floating point values is much more complicated, yeah? In particular, yeah, both addition and multiplication. It should be avoided. On modern computers, they have floating point units, so this is not that much an issue anymore. So they also can do floating point operations very efficiently in terms of performance, but not in terms of power. And if we want to build a rasterizer on a GPU in hardware, yeah, then a floating point addition needs much more power, and also such a unit needs much more space on a chip than an integer does. Yeah, so if we can use integer instead of float, we gain a lot. And this was essentially now, this is also why I always, or here already, look into the types of the variables, yeah. Because we see here we have costly floating point operations, at least this multiplication, and then we need to round again. And in a minute we will see how we can get rid of all these floating point operations and only have integer operations. So first of all, we can get rid of the multiplication by doing that incremental version. I've also shown you that, yeah? The idea, whenever we go one step to the right, we only go m upwards, yeah? So we can do that incrementally, and now our loop looks like this. Yeah, we start at xy, that's the starting point, and now then we set that point, and y is a float, yeah, so we have to round, and then we go one to the right and m upwards, yeah? And whenever this m goes over a rounding border, we get a new pixel row, or we go upwards one step. But Still now here we have this floating point operation. And in fact, now the algorithm we want to end up with is the so-called Brasenheim algorithm. It's a very basic algorithm that is used in many different situations in computer graphics. And it's a kind of formulation of that algorithm here that avoids to use floating point values. Yeah? It works on integer only. And so it can be implemented very efficiently in hardware. And on old computers, it requires much less power, which is very interesting on mobile phones. Yeah, and this is just the way to handle that problem. And here the idea is the following. So if we look at, this is the algorithm we were just looking into on the slide before. In our loop, for every pixel x, y, we go 1 to the right and m upwards. And now, as I said, whenever we get above one rounding boundary, yeah, we reach, or y is incremented, we reach a new pixel row. And now the idea is that we do exactly the same like here, but we take y as an integer value. Yeah, here it's float, and always m is added. And now we say, okay, we take an integer value, and we find some condition. Yeah, so whether when we go to the right, we also have to go upwards or not for our single pixel. Yeah, but otherwise it's exactly the same like here. But y is only an integer value here. And of course, now the interesting question is, what is this condition? How can we decide? Yeah, when we go to the right, whether we also have to go upwards. And essentially, that's very closely related to what we saw here. Yeah, if we have a slope of 4 over 8, so that means 1/2, yeah, we always go twice to the right and then once up. Twice to the right and then up. Right, right, up. Right, right, up. Yeah, so in every second step, we go to the upper left, and in every other step we just go upper right, and in every other step we only go to the right. And we don't call it upper right and right, but here we typically call it east or northeast. Yeah. So in every step we have the two options: either we just go east, that means our line doesn't pass a new boundary, and otherwise we go northeast. These are the simple, the two single cases we have to differentiate. Yeah? And this is what we have to decide here. Yeah? The sum condition, if we only go east, then, or if this condition is not met, we go east. And if it's met, then we go northeast. And now we have to decide which one is appropriate. And to decide about that, we make, first make things more complicated. Yeah? At first sight. And the idea is the following. Yeah? So to decide whether for a particular pixel so let's say this is our line, yeah? This is our current pixel. And now the question is, should we next choose this pixel or this pixel? And to decide about that, yeah? What we will do in the end is that we look at this position on the line. And if this line position here is in the upper pixel, we go northeast, and if it's in the lower pixel, we only go east. Yeah, so by this we can step through. But for this now we have to decide, yeah, is a certain point above the line or below the line? And we can simply describe that using what we use, an implicit function. We can also describe a line not only by y equals mx plus t, like here, but we can also do the following. We define a function that is larger than 0 above the line, smaller than 0 below the line, and equals 0 on the line. Yeah? An implicit function means we describe the line by all points where this function is 0. And we can define that very easily. Yeah, because we can describe the line with this mx plus t, and if y now is larger than mx plus t, we are here, and if it's smaller, we are here. So we simply take mx plus t minus, okay, how should I describe that now? So this is our line. And if we have an arbitrary point here, now we take x, y, yeah? We simply plug that in here and then take the difference mx plus t minus y. And if this difference is smaller than zero, then we are below. If it's larger than zero, we are here. And if it equals zero, then we have the equation that we had before, mx plus t equals y. Yeah, so that's a very simple simple concept. Yeah, it's just another way to describe that equation that we had before. Okay, so that's simple. Yeah, and now we make this consideration that we also did here. Let's assume this is our line. Yeah, this is our current pixel, and now we have two possibilities. Yeah, either the line obviously reaches the northeast pixel, or it doesn't reach it. Yeah, and we have to go to the east. And how can we differentiate that? We look at this point here, this orange one. And if it's above the line, or if the line passes underneath, then we say, okay, we go east. And if the line passes above, yeah, then we go northeast. So we just have to take that point, yeah, and here plug it into our implicit formula here. And if the value is smaller than zero, then it's below and we go northeast. And if it's larger than zero, we are underneath and we go east. Yeah, so our formula now looks like this, or our algorithm. It's exactly like before. We always go to the right, and then we evaluate the implicit function at x. For x, we already went to the right, yeah, we already added a 1, and at the position y plus 0.5, that's this here. Y plus 0.5 is just in between. And if that one is smaller than 0, then we are in this case, and then we go northeast, that means we increment y. Yeah? Okay, now obviously here we found a condition. Yeah, but did we really gain anything? Not much, yeah? Our f here contains m. So to evaluate f, yeah, we now have to evaluate that even more complicated expression, which is also a floating point or a rational number, yeah, because m is a fraction again. So we didn't gain much. But maybe looking at that here, does already somebody have an idea how we can solve that? How can we get rid of floating point numbers now? This is what we have to evaluate. We only have to find out whether this value of f is larger than zero or smaller than zero. And this is how f looks like. And m is a fraction. Yeah? No ideas? So we only want to know whether the value is larger than zero or smaller than zero. So if we have a fraction, and in the denominator, we have x1 minus x0 of this m, yeah? M is defined like this. And we know this one is positive, yeah? Then we can simply multiply the entire expression with x1 minus x0. Yeah, and so cancel this one out. And then we have an expression which is only integer values. Yeah, it's too large, or it's multiplied by this value. But since we only want to know whether it's larger than zero or smaller than zero, we don't care. Yeah, if we multiply with an arbitrary positive value, larger than zero or smaller than zero doesn't change. Yeah? And that's the core idea now. Yeah, we multiply that value so that it's an integer value, and we still look at the sign afterwards, and then we only have integers. So how can we do that practically? Yeah. So f is a rational value. Yeah, but we can multiply f with an arbitrary positive value and get rid of the denominator. And the denominator, now let's get back to this equation. Yeah, this denominator, or this m, is this here, y1 minus y0 times x1 minus x0. So we just take this implicit function and multiply it with x1 minus x0. And then we have a different implicit function, yeah, but this is still true. If it's larger than 0, we're above. If it's smaller than 0, we are below. And we get this formula here. Yeah, now this is our new implicit function, and you see, yeah, it has only integer values here. And we can even write that down a little bit simpler, because x1 minus x0 and y0 minus y1, these are constant for the entire line, and then we get this simple expression here. Yeah? Okay, so that helps. Because now, yeah, we can evaluate that one. Yeah, we replace that one by this here, and now we have only integers, yeah? With a slight exception here, we still have 0.5, yeah? But in fact, we can get rid of that 0.5 by multiplying again with a 2, and then the 0.5 becomes a 1. We will also see that later on, and we have a solution. But that's still not very efficient, because now to evaluate f, we need 2 multiplications here, and 3 subtractions. Yeah? So now in our loop, we only have integer operations, yeah, but rather many, 5 of them. Okay. But the nice thing now is we can again do something like this incremental trick that we did here. There, where we said whenever we go 1 to the right, we only have to go m upwards. And in fact, we can do the very same to evaluate f here. If we know the f for a particular point, yeah, we can evaluate it for the next point, or we can use that result to quickly evaluate it for the next point. Let it be that we go to the east or northeast. Yeah, of course, when we go east, the update is different than when we go northeast. Yeah, but we can solve that easily. So how does that work? Yeah, so let's say if we go northeast, then that means, yeah, we update x by going 1 to the right and 1 upwards. Yeah, so the next test, so we always test at position x plus 1 and y plus 1.5. If this is our current point, and we always evaluate by going 1 to the right and 1.5 upwards. If we now go 1 to the right and 1 upwards, the next test will be 2 to the right and 1.5 upwards. So if we evaluate f for that position, yeah, and do some simple algebra, we see that it's the f at our current position plus delta x minus delta y. Yeah, so if we know the f at our current position and we go northeast, we simply add delta x minus delta y and get the new f. Yeah? So our new d, and d is the current value for f, d stands for decider, decider, because it decides about whether we go northeast or only east. Yeah? So the new d is just the old value plus this. And analog, if we decide to go east, our new position we evaluate will be here, 2 to the right, only 1.5 upwards. And if we multiply that out, do some simple algebra, we realize that we have to subtract delta y to get the new d. Yeah? Okay. And as an algorithm, in the end, this looks like this. Yeah? So we first in the first step, we compute D as the F at our starting point. Yeah? X0, Y0 is the start position. The decider is at the right and half to the top. This is D. It's still a float for now, yeah, because we have the 0.5 here. Okay, and now we draw our pixel, and then if D is smaller than 0, we go northeast, and then we make these simple update rules. We increment Y, and we increment D. And in fact, it's this delta X minus delta Y. This is this increment, and if we only go east, we add this increment. Yeah? Okay, and you see here minus delta y is because here this is y0 minus y1, so 0 and 1 are swapped. Okay, and now this looks maybe complicated, but these terms, this one here and this one, the increments, they are always the same for the entire line, so we can pre-compute them and pull this out of the loop. Yeah, and then we end up with this algorithm. And in fact, what also happened in this algorithm is that we get rid of the 0.5 by multiplying all the stuff again with a 2, and then we end up with this here. And in our loop, yeah, we have, if our decider is negative, we go northeast, that means we increment y, and we update d by this value. And if we only go east, we don't update y and increment d by this value. Yeah? And now this is really definitely the most simple thing that you can do to rasterize such a line. Because what are we doing in the loop? We increment x. Yeah, we have to do that. We have to go to the right. We increment y if necessary. We decide about whether we go east or northeast by looking at the sine of d, yeah, which is also a very, very simple operation. Just look at the sine bit of d. And if we go northeast, we add this value to d, and if we go east, we add this value to d. Yeah, so we have to differentiate these two cases. Once we add this, and in the other case, we add this. And that's very, very simple now. And all the operations here are integer operations. And the starting value of d, yeah, can also be computed because we multiplied with 2. Is also purely integer now. Yeah? And so we compute the starting value of d, the increment if we go east, the increment if we go north, and we are done. And now you already see maybe an interesting thing. Obviously, if we go east, the decider variable is decreased because this increment is negative. And if we go northeast, the increment is positive. And that means our decider value, it starts at some point. Yeah, and whenever we go east, or let's say this is 0, we start at some point. Yeah, and whenever we go whenever we go northeast, yeah, we increase that value. And at some point, we are across the boundary. Yeah. So this is northeast, northeast, northeast. Now we are above the 0, so we decide to go east only. Yeah. And that means we decrement it again. For instance, like this. Yeah. And from now on, we go upwards again, and then we go down. Yeah. And by this, yeah, now we can step by step enumerate our line. Okay, good. So this algorithm only works if we are within an octant. I already said so. Yeah. So if our slope is between 0 and 1, and if our line goes to the right, and we ignored all other cases up to now, and I think it's straightforward to replace or to write now special code for each of these 8 octants. Of course, for instance, for this octant, now we do exactly the same like here, but now we iterate over y and compute the corresponding x values. Yeah, and we have to replace northeast and east by north and northeast, for instance. But that can also be done elegantly or more elegantly, yeah, by looking at the different cases. That's not so so relevant, essentially. Yeah, if we have negative slopes, for instance, we can say we can see that essentially we can do exactly the same algorithm, but instead of incrementing y, we decrement it always. And of course, we also a little bit have to change our update or our increments that's not on this slide, that's on the next slide, by here taking absolute values of y1 minus y0 for delta y, and then otherwise the algorithm works like before. Yeah, it's only that y is not incremented but decremented. So this gives us negative slopes. Oops. For if we have slopes larger than zero, we simply swap coordinates. And what we do with instead of iterating over x, we iterate over y. That's also rather simple to implement, or that's probably just another second case, yeah, where we do another loop. And if the line doesn't go from left to right, but from right to left, we simply swap start and end points. And for negative slopes, yeah, we do these changes that I just described. Yeah, so with rather few modifications, we can get a general algorithm that rasterizes our lines. Okay, good. So now, one effect that I already spoke about is that if we do so, yeah, we can very efficiently rasterize our lines. But now here we have the problem that depending on the slope, the length of the line varies. Or if we have x0 and x1 fixed, yeah, and we move the endpoint here along x1, yeah, then the length of the line will vary, but the number of pixels will not. And so, yeah, we have our length L, and the number of pixels that are set is delta X. Yeah, and the larger alpha gets, yeah, the longer the line becomes, yeah, depending or with respect to the number of set pixels. And as a result, the line will appear thinner. And yeah, this is a visible problem. Here you can see it again. Yeah, so here we have a horizontal line and a diagonal line. Yeah, and obviously the distance between the pixels or these dots here now is larger. Yeah, how can we solve that? One simple solution is that normally we can assume that we have grayscale colors. We cannot only set pixels or delete them or erase them, but we can set gray values, so we can use gray values to account for that, yeah, and use the horizontal lines at a slightly brighter gray, yeah, and so they look more similar to this diagonal line, for instance, yeah, that would be one option. But in fact, this is just a variant of a very general problem that we will look into in computer graphics very often, and this is called aliasing. To avoid aliasing, we need methods that we call anti-aliasing. and aliasing has a number of different incarnations. Yeah, there are different ways how aliasing can appear. And the most well-known aliasing is that if we rasterize such a line, of course, this line is represented by little squares, yeah, by these pixels, and this generates these jaggies, these staircases, yeah. And Yeah, this is what we call aliasing. And now you might say, okay, pixels are so small today. Yeah, this is not really a problem. Yeah, if you have your mobile phone screen, single pixel is so small or smaller than the resolution of the eye. Does this matter? Yes, it does matter, because aliasing appears also in more subtle variants. So for instance, if we draw such a set of lines here, yeah, looks a little bit like an hourglass. And of course, again, you don't see it here on the screen, but you can see it in real world examples very often. If you zoom in here, for instance, you see these weird patterns here. Yeah, these arcs here, or these curves, and they can become very distracting. And this is also a variant of aliasing. It's more subtle, yeah, but it's also an aliasing problem. By the way, this effect is called Moiré effect, and on Wikipedia you can find very nice images that show where such effects can come from. And we will come back to the aliasing problem in the lecture when we look at textures, because for textures aliasing also appears and it can be solved elegantly. For lines, it's a little bit more complicated, or there's no perfect solution for that. But at least I want to describe one solution here that works together with Brasenham. And the solution is always that instead of setting single pixels, we always sort of try to rasterize a smoothed version of our object. And by this smoothing, we will come back to the theory in when we look at textures. By this smoothing, these aliasing patterns, yeah, these frequencies, these patterns that are not there, that we see but they are not there, can disappear, or they can at least be reduced. And how can we smooth such a line? Yeah, we can just sort of blur it. Yeah, and we can say in such a case here, yeah, this line intersects this pixel and this pixel. So instead of deciding which one to set, we use grayscale, yeah, and set both. And we make that one darker, that is closer to the line, but we also give some intensity to the other one. So the result, yeah, now zoomed, yeah, so maybe it looks a little bit weird, we can see here. But if we make that smaller, these lines look definitely better. Yeah? And they look smoother, maybe a little bit unsharp, yeah, but they look much better. And most of these aliasing effects can disappear. Now the question is, yeah, how can we do that? So here you see, for instance, obviously here, for these two, for this column, the line passed just in between, so both pixels have roughly the same color. Here it was much more in the lower pixel than here, so only a little bit of intensity goes here, and so forth. Yeah. So what we have to decide now is not only which one, where does the line pass, yeah, so, but also how close does it pass, or how close is it to the center, so that we can distribute intensity between the two. And of course, our decider variable here, d, is exactly, or can be used as a measure, how far are we away. So I told you that if we have our line, then this implicit function f tells us whether we are above the line or below the line. But in fact, the absolute value also tells us how far away are we from the line. Yeah? And so we can directly use this value d to decide about how to distribute the intensity between the two pixels. Yeah? And in fact, it can simply be shown, or quickly be shown, that d over 2 delta x is exactly this distance here between the next point and this line, and we can take this value a now to distribute between the two. Obviously here most of the color should go here and only very little of the color should go here, and yeah, we can now look at all different possible constellations of how to distribute. So let's say we have, this is our current pixel. We decided to go east. Yeah. And now we look at this value A. This gives us the distance to this point. Yeah. You remember our decider measures the implicit function here. If this value is smaller than 0.5, obviously our line passes more in the upper half of the pixel, so we can also distribute intensity to here. And if it passes here underneath, so A is larger than 0.5, then we should also distribute some intensity to that pixel. And how we distribute them, yeah, we can describe by simple formulas. I won't derive all of them, and I hope they are right now. but yeah, okay, I mean, that's an implementation detail then. But the idea always is that the two intensities sum up to one. Yeah, so that in general we have a global intensity of one per column. And of course we could also use that slope argument from before, that a horizontal line and a diagonal line should also have the same intensity. We can also add that here, yeah, and then spread smaller intensities to also get that done. And if we go northeast, we have the two cases, yeah, that A is larger than minus 0.5. That means, yeah, because we went northeast, D is smaller than 0. So A is smaller than 0, but larger than minus 0.5. So in that case, we distribute between these two. And in that case, we distribute between these two. And these are the intensities that we spread here. Yeah, so, okay, that's a very simple first way to do anti-aliasing. And of course, you might also think about other possibilities to do that. And one would be, and I already spoke about that in the last lecture, usually if we rasterize lines, we also assign a line thickness. Yeah? So what? Okay, I will take that part. If we rasterize lines, yeah, I will also assign a line thickness, yeah. And if we assign a line thickness of one, what we could use is a simple rectangle to describe that line, yeah. And now we could also try and rasterize this rectangle. We will see next Thursday how that works. But here we will again have the same problem, that now this line is so thin, yeah, that for every pixel we have to decide how much of that pixel is covered by that simple by that rectangle here, yeah. So this pixel here, for instance, would be covered by, let's say, 20%, yeah. So we give it an intensity of 20%, and that pixel would be covered by 80%. Yeah, and that pixel, again, maybe by 20%. Yeah, but that would require that now we take this box here, this rectangle, and we make a computation, yeah, of the intersection and determine the area of that intersection. And now we also have these border cases here at the boundary, for instance, where this intersection shape can become rather difficult. Yeah, so really computing the real intersection is possible, but not efficient. And this is essentially is just an approximation for that, and it delivers good results. And we will always come back to such stuff like simple approximations. Okay, good. So much about line drawing. For those of you who are interested, I also have slides here. I mean, this is not relevant for the exam or whatsoever, but the idea can also be transferred to the drawing of circles. That's a nice, interesting problem. The nice thing is whether we are above or below a circle can also be described by such an implicit function in a very simple manner. It's not linear, but it's quadratic. And in the end, it results in an algorithm that is very similar. But because it's quadratic, let me go to the to this. This is the end algorithm. And because it's quadratic, the point is that the increment from step to step is not constant, but the increment of the increment is constant. So we have to update, incrementally update the increment, and with the increment update the position, and then we can transfer this idea to also rasterized circles, yeah, which is a nice side remark, but as I said, not relevant for the exam or whatsoever, but if you're interested, please also have a look at that. And then surprisingly, I'm again finished earlier. Of course, I'm happy to answer any questions. And if this is not the case, we will meet again next Thursday. Thank you.